Stephen Carr bought an old high school building and converted it to a ministry center and a church. He did this with funding from multiple partner churches and the construction labor of numerous mission teams. Stephen is now a Standing Stone, a ministry of encouragement to pastors going through difficult situations in their churches. He also serves a local church bivocationally. Stephen will share his story of enlisting new partners and how he co-labored together with them here on SmallTownBaptist.net.
We have the privilege of pastoring at a church called Bruce Outreach Center. It was an old high school building that was converted into a ministry and a church. The building was shut down for about 5 years and was put up for sale for auction in the community. And we put a bid on it, ridiculously low. And the bid was $50,000, and the building's 118,000 square feet on 12 acres of land. So that was a God thing. I didn't want the building. I thought it was way over our heads, but the local community, the county commissioners voted unanimously to give us that building for the $50,000, called me, congratulated me, and I think I heard God laugh at me. So we went ahead and proceeded to work in that church to reach unsaved people, unchurched people, and de-churched people. And that was a vision that we had. And within the first few years, over half the congregation were first-generation Christians. Bruce Outreach Center was both a ministry center and a church. Actually, the motor, the engine, was the church, but then it produced from there so many ministries, mainly mercy ministries, everything from food to clothing to GED classes to chemical dependency recovery to basketball camps and on and on. We did summer camps. It was year-round. We used probably about 80% of the entire building by the time we were fully running. Yeah, the ministry at Bruce Outreach Center was impossible to be done because the overwhelming task of the actual building was too much for any one person. The folks we had was about 15 core people that went there, most of them with no skill set at all as far as doing work in the building. It was one of the poorest areas in the country, in an old mill town and coal mining town. And so we didn't have the finances, didn't have the manpower, didn't have the skill set. So in order for that to be accomplished, we needed multiple partners with a variety of backgrounds and skill sets over time knit together to be able to produce that. During the summer, we would go from about May until the end of August with teams there every single week, sometimes multiple teams throughout the week. And then throughout the year, we had a team at least every month coming in doing varying projects to get us up and running and reaching our community. To enlist those many teams required a varied amount of outreach. We put our information onto the old Appalachian Regional Ministry arm through local, denominational websites, but I also did a lot of one-to-one contacts. We were part of the state convention of churches where we were, and so they put the word out to Maryland and Delaware. And then as they knew people, they sent me on to other folks, and I got to the point we discovered partners in Alabama. So I would travel down to Alabama just to talk to pastors and tell them what we were doing and what was going on, and asking them to pray about possibly joining us in the journey. Usually I tried to connect with pastors that I knew who were connected to pastors that I already had a relationship with. I didn't do a lot of cold calling, but our local association at the time started a partnership with us. And I started to go around to all the churches and just stop in and visit. And if the pastor wasn't there, I'd make a return trip the next day or, just to introduce myself, because I really felt that if a pastor or a mission leader could see the person and see the ministry and see the need and see the vision, they'd be much more apt to join us in that journey, to buy into that need and what can be accomplished for the kingdom. Yeah, I went to training on how to raise my support. And I remember sitting in a three-day training and hearing one man from Campus Crusade for Christ give a piece of advice that just moved my heart. And he said, as support raisers, as you raise your support, you need to learn to love your donors and use their resources, not the other way around and love their resources and use your donors. And as soon as I heard that quote, I had to get out of that room and go call my wife. And I said, Leslie, we have a new ministry. Not only are we going to be doing church planting at the time, but every pastor we meet, we are going to encourage them and stay in touch with them, no matter what their response is when it comes to raising support. We were going to love on them and build relationships with them, which is really a God thing, because even to this day, my ministry now is loving on pastors. So already God was operating in that perspective and that training. Oh, when you build relationships with those who support you, with churches and individuals, and I know our focus here is with churches, but the pastors are individuals, and so are mission leaders and associate pastors and church staff. What it looks like is building relationships. It's getting to know folks. It means taking the time to give them a call, whether it's once a month, once a week, whatever your schedule allows you to do, to touch base, to check in, almost like they are part of your ministry. So you may be starting a church, you may be doing some kind of mission, and you then connect with the church that's supporting you, and they're a sister church and they're a partnering church. Those in that church, the pastor and leadership of that church, are just as much a part of your ministry as your church plant is. And so if you look at it that way, you'll reach out to find out how you can pray for them, how you can encourage them and build that relationship. Because what happens in time is that your bond will go so great. It's not about the support. It's about the partnership. The partnership produces the support. You just got to be focused on loving on those guys and those ladies, and that'll make a huge difference. So if you're going to reach somebody in your community and you find out that they're having surgery, you're probably going to try to follow up with them as you build those relationships. Well, if I find out Pastor Joe is going to have surgery, I make a note of that and I call Pastor Joe up before surgery and I pray with him. And I look at him as my ministry field. That's how it kind of looks like. And communication, texting, everybody has a different flow and a different style, but it's all about relationship and being intentional about it. And one of the things that's easy to do is to carve out time. Let's just say on Monday mornings or, you know, Sunday evenings or whatever, carve out a little time where you will pick a number of partners. If you have 20 partners, you don't have to contact all 20, but just pick out five that you're going to pick and just rotate them through and just reach out to them and say, hey, I'm taking some time today to pray specifically for some of our partners. You're one of those. Let me know how I can be praying for you. It'd be my honor to do that. I think there's many pastors, my brother, that never get prayed for or prayed for specifically. They go about their labor and we end up using them. Once again, going back to using them instead of loving them. And one of the great ways to love them is to have an active prayer ministry and partnership. When you build connections and you share the vision, the Holy Spirit ends up actually recruiting your mission teams. You don't go out and try to get mission teams. Churches will want to be a part of it. If you're taking care of that ministry team and you're loving on them and you build a relationship with them, they're going to know how they can be more a part of your ministry, and because it's a relationship. It's really important to make sure that you're not just bringing teams in for the sake of saying you have a team there and then trying to find busy work for them to do. That would become burdensome, become hard on you, and it's not profitable for the team that comes. You want to respect and honor the team that's coming from another church. So what you need to do is be real specific. You need to be able to list things. This is what we need from a mission team. These are the number of people we need. This is the supplies we need. Be upfront and honest. Tell them if you have the resources or not. We had plumbing that had to be done in the old high school building, Bruce Outreach Center. And the cost on that would have been hundreds of thousands of dollars. We were just upfront with it. We ended up having a guy that came and replumbed the entire building for like $4,000. We were just right up front. Tell people what you need. Tell them what's necessary. Tell them why it's needed so they know the importance of what they're coming to do. And then set the stage for them. Your job is not to be busy for them. Your job is to make it easy for them to be busy for the kingdom work. When you do that, everything works out well. It's not a burden anymore. You're partners, and they're with you on the field. It's really important to stay in touch with every church that supports you and partners with you. And I want to just add this quick thing in as well. I know it's hard because we're so trained on raising our finances, but churches can be your partners who aren't giving you finances. They could be strategic prayer partners. They could have individuals who can consult with you, who are experts in certain areas or willing to send certain members to help supplement other mission teams. You don't have to look for a large church with a large budget to give you a large check. What you need to look for are folks that will buy into or share the vision and be led by the Lord to be a part of what you are doing. When you have those partners, you want to take care of them. And when you take care of them, that's any number of things. Biggest thing is communicating with them. Very difficult for a church to know how to pray for you. Very difficult. Some churches won't support you financially, but if they know you have a need, they'll take a special love offering. They'll try to take care of you, but they don't know unless you tell them what their needs are. And so when we did our ministry, I put out a monthly newsletter. The coaching I received was just send it out by email or send it out by labels that are generated automatically. My wife and I would put together the newsletter and we hand addressed every single envelope every month. We made it personal. Now that took a little bit of labor, but every single partner knew how important they were to us when we did that. My wife would help me and address the envelope and I would write a personal note on the back of the letter. So everybody got that personal touch. Once again, it sounds like labor, but if you're going to look at your people to like you're going to use them, then it is extra work. But if you look at your people like you love them and they're with you on this, they're like family. So you're willing to take that little bit of extra labor in order to reach out to them. Thank you notes are probably one of the most powerful tools that you can use in building relationships and partnerships. And it costs so little. You can go to Amazon and get a whole stack of professional looking thank you cards for like $24. And there's like 50 or 100 cards. Well, my approach is this. For those who are regular givers, periodically, I will send them a thank you text message. They're getting my letter every month, you know, with a personal note. But then every couple months, I'll send them a thank you text. Just want to let you know, my friend, just found out you gave. Thank you. It just goes a long way in keeping communication going. But anytime there's a new gift, anytime there is an additional gift, when somebody gives more than they usually give, anytime someone just starts or just gives a one-time gift, I always sit down and handwrite a thank you card. And that thank you card is not 2 pages long. It's just simply, hey, brother, thank you so much for sending $100 towards our ministry. You don't know how much that means to us. Thank you for blessing us. And I sign my name and you actually use that person's name. But thank you card with a stamp, brother, goes a long, long way, especially in an era now where all we get are emails and Facebook thank yous. To build partnerships with churches that may be looking at sending teams, you need to have, I guess you would call it from the financial world, a prospectus, like a little profile of like what you're looking for. And I know for us, we would break that down. Some could be construction projects. Some could be ministry projects, because those are different kind of personnel a lot of times from the church. You know, is there an age issue? Like, for example, this is only for adults or this can be a family mission trip. We put down specifics, what's exactly going to need to be done. This room needs to be painted. We need to put a new roof on. We need to, you know, we start talking about those kind of things, but those are specific requests. What's needed? What materials are needed? What you can provide? That's important too. You need to tell them, look, if it's a small church, they may not be able to afford to come to you. If you're telling them they got to stay in the local hotel and they can't afford all those nights for those people. However, they may be able to use your building if you have showers there or if you have rooms they can use air mattresses. So you got to let them know what you can provide and let them know what is needed. And then that's the starting point, because then usually what I have found is the pastor will take that and say, okay, we may fit this. You know, I think we got guys that can do this. I think we can afford this. And you give those opportunities. And one of the things I found that really helps is making sure that you always get feedback. When you talk to a mission team, say to them, what about our perspectives? What about our approach worked best for you? And what would have been better if we added something or changed something? So that document you're talking about is going to be constantly honed based on feedback and what your need is, because your need as a church is going to change as you grow. And it's important when you talk to mission teams that they understand the culture they're coming into. If you're coming from a city and you're going into a rural area, there's going to be certain things about the culture you're going to need to understand and learn, even if you don't necessarily agree with some things. For example, politics or, you know, philosophy, whatever it is, you know you're different coming from one area into another. It's important that that church knows who you are. Because most churches I know, they don't want to come in and cause problems. They want to help you become stronger in your ministry. So they need to get the heads up. It's not fair to expect them to know. I use the analogy of marriages. It's not fair for one mate to assume the other one knows how the other one feels. They need to know. So you let them know about the cultural things that you, when they come in, and what's acceptable and what's not, and what how they look at things. And just so you can train your folks on the front end. One of the things that helps with that is having a dialogue. If you want to, if you have a team that wants to come in, it's really good to find out who the team leader is. And then you organize conversations with that team leader over time. They need to know they have access to you. They can figure out, they can ask questions, and then you can be able to help hone things and clarify things, and that relationship goes deeper, and you can actually learn about the culture. Because if you don't take care of the culture, if you come in, you can actually offend folks, and then they're not going to listen to the gospel. You don't want that distraction. It is a lot of work, but it is an incredible investment. It's kind of like if someone told you, we'll have $1 million for you, but you're going to have to work a few extra hours in order to get that $1 million. It's going to be some labor, but you're going to get a lot out of that labor. God's going to do some great things from that labor. You would not argue a bit about that. You know, $1 million, some extra work, I'll do it. You're not going to get $1 million, but it could be definitely, when it comes to eternity, I'm worth a lot more than $1 million. So it's, as I said before, when we started this conversation, your partners are just as much a part of your ministry as your actual ministry is. And I'm going to tell you, you think that that's all too much labor. Without existing churches and those partners, you're not going to have a ministry to do anyway. You need to have those relationships. So invest in them, and God's going to bless. Well, I'll tell you, if I can leave any other advice to folks, some of the things I'll tell you is this. It's all about relationships. Remember, it's not about the money. It's not about getting the finances. If you look at it like that, you're going to have days you think you failed, but you're not. Just like when people don't come and respond to the gospel right away, you didn't fail. You presented the gospel. You did what you're supposed to do. You're building relationships. It's not about the money. Prayer is at the heart. Prayer is the focal point. I never any longer, when I talk to supporters or potential supporters, I never pray that they would give to us. My prayer is that God would move them and they be obedient to God, whatever that may mean. Not everybody's called to be partners, but you want God to lead that. So it's not about the finances. It's not about the money. It's about the relationship, and it's about prayer. One of the things that you struggle with when you raise support is this. Your job, unfortunately, is to try to get people to support you. But it's such a, like, it's like a 40, 50% success rate when you talk to people, when you ask them to support you. I have 100% success rate. That's because I don't ask people to support. I ask people to pray about it. And 100% of people will always look at me because I'm talking to Christians. I'm not talking to the world to support our ministry. I'm talking to Christians. And they're always willing to pray about it. And then I let God do the work after that. Yeah, sharing prayer requests is so important. You can't expect God's people to lift you up in prayer if they don't know what they're praying about. So some of the advice I would give is, first of all, be very specific. I think we do have generalizations, and talking with somebody the other day, I was reminded of that. You know, we'll put prayer requests down that God would, push back the darkness, or God would do, great and mighty things. And that's all good. I mean, I get all that. It's not a put down, but churches want to know how they can specifically pray for you. What about the man down the road who's dealing with alcoholism and he actually came to church for the first time? You know, can you pray for him? What about the guy who's the alcoholic down the street who will never come to church? He's never said yes. And he pretty much says, get out of my face. I want nothing to do with you. But your heart's heavy for that person. One of the mistakes we make is we assume that partnering churches want to see success because that's what they invest in. People give to success. But most churches that I know really care about you. And when they partner with you, they want to pray for you. And they know it's not easy, the field that you're working on. No pastor thinks ministry's easy, let alone if you're planning a church and you need partners. So it's okay to be real. It's kind of like the Christian that goes to church and acts like everything's fine. And they look foolish because everyone knows that they can't be perfectly fine. We know what life is like. When you write to your supporting church and all you write about is the baptisms and the conversions and all the great things going on, and you don't have one thing that you're struggling with, they know you're not being truthful. They're looking at that thing, and that's not, but they want to be there for you to celebrate, as Paul said, to rejoice when you rejoice, to weep when you weep, and to walk with you so that you don't bear your burden by yourself. So be specific, be intentional, and then on reverse, find out how you can be praying for that church because it's a relationship. A couple quick things, if I can just finish up. First of all, tell stories. Tell stories. Like when things happen, tell your partner's stories of what God's doing, and never, ever, ever be afraid to ask for help. And when you ask for help, also remember, never be afraid to help. The greatest way to, I believe, that God blesses us, or the greatest way to have God bless us, is to be a river and not a reservoir. So don't just be a support raiser. Make sure that you're pouring out as a church and a ministry to other churches and ministries. And when you're generous, God will be generous with you. So those are the main things that I would share.
You have been listening to Stephen Carr, the founding pastor of Bruce Outreach Center, and now with Standing Stone Ministries. You will find more audio files and free resources for print like this at smalltownbaptist.net.